When NYPD Blue began, Andy Sipowicz was a cop loaded with baggage. He was an alcoholic, a loose cannon, and at least initially, a racist. His first boss, an African-American lieutenant named Arthur Fancy, was inches away from firing Sipowicz. But the two came to understand, teach, and even embrace one another as part of the series' ongoing examination of race and redemption. James McDaniel played Lieutenant Fancy and played him with as much volatility as Dennis Franz played Sipowicz, as in this scene in which the two are arguing about Andy's on-the-job use of the N-word.
Would have been smarter for you to go home when the shift ended.
If you're going after me, you bring charges or let Quasi do it. Because I want a chance to answer him in front of somebody besides you.
Yeah, this is about me, Andy. I'm the racist.
I've said that word. I've thought it plenty, but I've never used it on a job till your hump pal put us on that road.
This isn't about a word, Andy, or your impure thoughts. It's about you making this case harder to work.
Not about you being black, huh? Not about giving some back to me?
It's about what I say it's about.
Then say, part of what it's about is watching me sweat.
Well, a hell of a lot went down today, so I'd have to check my notes. But I thought I'd spend some of that time trying to save your sorry ass.
Give me a break.
No, I'm not going to take you out, Andy. I move you out, my white bosses, they send me a little message. They send me another one just like you. But maybe that one can't do the job like you can.
Jeez, thanks a lot, boss.
If you go, it'll be somebody like Quasi, or like that reporter. I've been dealing with white cops like you ever since the academy. I can manage you with my eyes closed. Now maybe you can't handle a black man being your boss.
I can handle it. I've been covering you 3.5 years, except when you get so tied up in your brother crap, you won't let us work the streets. That's when you get yourself in trouble.
Hey, Lou, we got a report of a person shot near the Houston Street Projects. Want me to handle it?
Was it a homicide?
I don't know.
That teenage girl, the eyewitness, isn't she in those projects?
Yeah, I think we got him out, though.
Sylvie was involved there.
Check it out.
You want me to check it out?
Yeah. Sipowicz will handle it.
Did this scene and the whole episode lead to discussions about race off camera?
Well, I mean, we discuss race a lot anyway, you know, or we kind of used to, you know, especially me and Dennis, you know, because we come from two very different backgrounds. So, you know, we talk about race. It's a part of our dialogue. I mean, we spend a lot of time together.
After having played a cop yourself for several years, what do you think of cops now? Do you find yourself relating to the cops or what?
No, I keep it simple. I relate to people. You know, there's good cops and there's bad cops.
Right.
And, you know, bad cops make bad policy and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I get just as exasperated by cops now as I ever did. You know, I mean, you know, I drive an expensive car. It's not unusual for me to be pulled over twice on the way home on any given evening, you know, because my windows are slightly tinted. I mean, we know what that's about. So I just take it kind of a person at a time, you know, knowing that it's human nature. There's some good guys and there's some bad guys. I just start talking to him. I start asking him why he's doing this. And I try to get into his psychology so that when we finally separate, he thinks about it a little bit. It was kind of an unusual experience.
What kind of reactions have you gotten after talking with the cops who pull you over?
Well, L.A. cops are tough because they have this veneer that's very unlike New York cops, whereby they try to act like perfect human beings. Hello, sir. How are you? You know, we're just about to shoot you, but have a nice day. You know, they go through some type of training for that. I don't know what it is. You know, it's like smile and hate you at the same time, you know. New York cop, if they don't like you, you know, they make no bones about it. It's like, I don't like you, buddy, right now, right here. Let's go. Does that answer your question?
Yeah. No, is there anything you've been able to use on NYPD Blue from your experiences, from your encounters with cops who've pulled you over?
Well, you know, if I was a street cop, there definitely would be. My approach would be to play one of those guys because, you know, that goes straight across race lines, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because I've had that experience. That's why I say it's not necessarily a racial thing, because I've had that experience with black cops, too.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that hail fellow well met type behavior just as good as anybody else. So, if I was a street cop, I would probably play one of those guys. You know, I don't like just, you know, regular old heroes, you know, just, you know, da-da-da, Dudley Do-Right, here he comes. I would play one of those kind of guys. Try to find the humanity in there someplace.
James McDaniel, speaking with Terry Gross in 1996. Dennis Franz, like McDaniel, was a veteran of previous Stephen Bochco cop shows. He played a bad cop, Sal Benedetto, on Hill Street Blues, then was brought back as a slightly more noble one, Norman Bunce, on the same show. That character was so popular, he was spun off into a sitcom, Beverly Hills Bunce. It was Andy Sipowicz, though, who made Franz a major TV star and who was the heart and soul of NYPD Blue. When the series began, Andy was in major trouble, crying out for help. As it ends, he's the veteran authority figure helping others. In this scene from a recent show, the newly promoted Sergeant Sipowicz stops a skirmish between a cop and a delivery man who's gotten a parking violation. He talks first to the suspect, then to the officer, to defuse the conflict.
All right, what's your story?
I work for the medical lab. I come here every day to pick up the blood samples from the doctor's offices. It takes me 30 seconds. I walk in, I grab the box, and I walk out.
What'd you say to the officer?
I said, I'm trying to make a living.
That's it?
I tried to show the man respect when I first came out. I told him, I got over 30 stops to make. There's no place to park. I don't leave my car but for a minute. But he don't listen. He say, it's too late. That's when I got mad.
All right, step back here a second. Come here. Is that true, what he said?
Pretty much.
What do you want to do here?
What do you mean?
I mean, do you want to create a situation? This is a working man. He's not sticking nobody up. You're going to cost him 2 days' wages with that ticket, and then when he gets mad, you're going to collar him?
What should I have done?
You see him go inside the building, you wait. If he's in there for a while, then you write him up. If he comes right back out again, you talk to him.
What do I say?
Tell him you're trying to keep traffic moving. If he's a right guy, you be a right guy.
And about how long do I wait while he's in the building?
5 minutes.
I'm sorry.
It's the kind of thing you get a feel for after a while.
What do I do now?
Give me a summons. Now go over there, take the cuffs off, tell them they have a nice day.
Yes.
Terry spoke with Dennis Franz in 1987 during the Norman Bunce days and asked him about that character and his own upbringing.
I grew up in a suburb out of Chicago. It was about 7 miles out of the city proper in Maywood. The area was, yes, very much of a working-class neighborhood. My father was a postal worker, and he worked in a factory, and my mother also worked at the post office. There was a heavy, tough element in our neighborhood. We had gangs. I wasn't a part of them, but a lot of my friends were members of gangs, and therefore I had an association with them. I kind of walked a fine line always because I kept those friends, and then when I got involved in theater, of course the gangs didn't want to have nothing to do with the theater, so I had both sides of the fence, and I was able to play both sides too, so I had different groups of friends that were complete opposites.
You know, earlier you were telling us that you knew a lot of gang members, though you never really belonged to the gangs when you were growing up in a working-class suburb of Chicago. How did you first get interested in acting? What drew you to theater?
A girl I was going out with, it was in my junior year of high school, and she was going to try out for a play called The Crucible. I went along with her. I was involved in three sports up to that time. I was involved in football, baseball, and swim. And this came around the time of the swim season. We were just starting that sport. I went with her to the auditions, and I sat in the room and I watched everybody audition. I didn't even realize up to that point that they had theater at my high school. That's how out of it I was. And I heard everybody auditioning and I heard the guys and I thought, gee, I can do as good as them. So kind of involuntarily, I found myself raising my hand and saying, could I try this? I ended up getting one of the leads and I dropped out of the swim team for that season, I thought, well, if this is my least favorite of the sports anyway, so let me try this. So I tried that play. I thoroughly enjoyed the experience, so I went out for the next play, and one by one I started eliminating the sports and devoting myself full-time to theater. The girlfriend didn't get cast, by the way, so I lost her as a girlfriend, but I got the career out of the deal.
What kind of parts were you playing back then?
Well, believe it or not, I was playing leading man type parts. At that time, I looked different and had a little more hair and was a little thinner. And so I was playing a lot of leading men.
You know, something that really troubles me about television and films is that you have to have a lot of hair and be really slim and classically attractive to be a leading man or a leading lady.
That more often than not is the case. I think there have been exceptions to the rule, and I think
You're an exception now, right? I mean, you're
well. Thank you. Ed Asner, I was referring to Jack Klugman. Even on L.A. Law, just look at Joel Eikenberry and Michael Tucker, or look around you anywhere, and you'll see matchups of people that don't necessarily always fit.
Dennis Franz, speaking to Terry Gross in 1987. Coming up in the second half of the show, more with David Milch, this time with NYPD Detective Bill Clark. I'm David Bianculli, and this is Fresh Air.